welcome to another episode of the podcast Shangela, which I always say is an appropriate title because that's my name, Shangela. So you found the right spot. I am here today, so very thrilled. I'm a black diva, but you know, I'm turning red with excitement because I'm so happy to be here with the Emmy Award winning, with the Grammy Award winning, with the best selling author, with the comedian and actress, and all around just smiley, happy, amazingly gorgeous person. Kathy Griffin is here.
Woo! Hey! Oh, she's fantastic. Yes. I hear she is a riot. Good booking. Amazing. Amazing.
Well, I will plug that too. Ta-da, she definitely is. And I'm so thankful that you, as a legend, you have a t-shirt on today that says Legends Supporting Legends.
That's right.
And I consider you a legend.
Oh my goodness.
Sure.
What?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as a traveling diva, a person of the LGBTQIA plus, all the extra
letters. All the letters and numbers,
you know,
yes.
Okay, community. I've known that you've been an advocate for us for so long, but also you have been a comedian who is unashamed, who says some stuff, says things sometimes that I'm like, ooh, she went there.
Yeah.
Which great, because a lot of people won't go there. What would you say, looking back on your career and as you continue to do even more great things, but looking back, what's one of those moments that you had that was just like, yeah, I'm doing the right thing? You felt in the groove of being a comedian?
Well, first of all, I honestly love doing stand-up so much. I have what I call a stand-up comedy disorder. So like on my last world tour, Kathy Griffin, Laugh Your Head Off, get it? I would honestly, the show started at 2 hours and there were nights I would do 3 hours and 40 minutes because either something new would come on the radar or be part of the zeitgeist. So I just absolutely love it. So no matter what, no matter how they try to knock me down or whatever happened post-Trump scandal and stuff, you just can't stop me from doing it. And so I would say sort of like there have been a few seminal moments that I'm proud of. Like, first of all, I'm very proud to be one of only three women in the history of the Grammys to win for Best Comedy Album. So I'm always trying to like further, you know, any kind of marginalized group. And one of the reasons I really wanted to take the Trump story on the road is, and, you know, now make a film called Kathy Griffin, A Hell of a Story, a docu-comedy. And I wanted to not just do a concert film, but include the doc footage because, you know, I was in a horrible place and sometimes I'm happy and sometimes I'm kind of crazed and stuff. But more importantly, it was just really important that people see that I didn't go down. You know, you don't have to think I'm the funniest or whatever, but just that this situation was so extraordinary, historic, in fact. And, you know, I put it all out there. And, like, you know, when they put me under investigation without even asking by two federal agencies, that's historic.
So, Kathy, I want to jump right into that because most everyone knows this was the head or the mask.
That's right.
Covered in ketchup, seen around the world.
Around the world.
And a lot of people know, but some may not, of our listeners, that this, you know, resulted in a lot of great controversy for you.
And at real first, controversy.
Let's go there, because I watched your documentary. I want to dive into that as well.
You watched it?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh.
I've seen
You're like
it.
The third person who's seen it.
Oh,
I'm
good.
So excited.
Well, I'm exclusive.
Exclusive indeed.
So if it's okay with you, I want to talk about that.
Of course, whatever you want.
First, I want to go there with the controversy. When you first took that photo, this is a photo. You're holding a mask of Trump's. A Trump mask.
Right. A Halloween mask.
Yes.
And it's covered in, you know, ketchup or whatever. I actually didn't do that part of it. But, you know, I purposely made a very stoic face because I wanted people to know, as you know, can tell, just I'm a spaz. And I gesticulate a lot. And so I thought I'll be very still so people will know, like, this is Kathy doing something a little outside the box. And, you know, comedy has a history of making statements as well as jokes.
Was it just an image just to be like a photo or was it promoting something at the time?
It was to be provocative. It was a statement. I mean, some people actually laughed and thought it was funny. And I'm like, that's fine. It's up for interpretation. But for me, as a female, you know, he's such a misogynist. And by the way, I don't even like Megyn Kelly. But I do remember him saying, you know, there's blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. And I just honestly, I just thought, well, let's see how he likes it when there's blood coming out of his wherever. And I really thought that it was so over the top that people would be, you know, I'm used to a little controversy. And I really thought it would just kind of die on the vine or maybe be seen by a few people or whatever. I had no idea.
So then it goes viral.
Well, not
what
only
are your
that.
Initial thoughts when you found out that it was going viral?
Well, I didn't know initially, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to make the film and include the documentary part of it, because I learned so much along the last couple of years. I didn't know that the Trumps have what I call it the Trump wood chipper. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there was an apparatus in place to take that photo that very day and put it in the global super, super far right wing machine. And that's how they that day made the insane connection that I had taken this photo because I was in ISIS. So,
in ISIS?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, I obviously I'm their demo. A lot of red-haired female comedians in their late 50s are being recruited by ISIS. And so, you know, I had to learn later that that imagery was spread that day. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if it was like the bots or whatever. And then I, of course, was my social media was flooded by bots and death threats and stuff. But the serious part of it is, and the reason I made the movie is it really is historic. So never in the history of this country has a sitting United States president taken a private citizen, much less a middle-aged female comedian, and, you know, opened an investigation by two federal agencies, the Secret Wow. Service and the U.S. Attorney's Office. So they were ready to prosecute if they found anything. The U.S. Attorney's Office was right there. And do I was put on the no-fly list.
Do they come in and start confiscating things from your house? Like, how does that...
Yeah, they can do what's called a no-knock raid. Uh-huh. And so that means if the feds think I'm a real threat, which, by the way, I'm the only one this happened to. So the other folks that allegedly threatened Trump, like, you know, Johnny Depp got like drunk in a bar and, you know, they didn't put him under investigation. They never gave me sort of the courtesy call of like, hey, have you lost your mind or whatever?
Right.
And I've actually now talked to pretty much every other person that like, quote, got in trouble. Like Peter Fonda did a tweet, right? And I mean, come on, Peter Fonda's been around forever. Easy Rider, like, hello. And, you know, he's been a liberal forever. And so he did a tweet. And then all of a sudden, you know, Fox News and Breitbart, and they all pick it up. And Peter Fonda is threatening to kill the president. So I sent him an email and I said, okay, if this gets out of hand, here's the First Amendment attorney that I used and stuff. And he called me up. And by the way, he kind of is the guy from Easy Rider. He's like, hey, man. I'm like, I'm a woman, but okay. No, but he goes, he's like, hey, man, it's cool. The Secret Service called me for like 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, okay, my legal bills are now up to about $300,000. But, you know, and so they definitely, you know, chose to make an example of me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that they were working in tandem with TMZ. And so I was really gratified when the Daily Beast printed an article months later where they talk about Harvey Levin talking to Trump, you know, multiple times a week and coordinating with Trump. And when I first said it, people thought I was crazy, and I'm sure it sounded crazy. And then the Mueller investigation starts, and then AMI Media flips, and they own The Inquirer. And in the meantime, they've purchased OK, Life and Style, In Touch. So that explains why there were all these hit pieces about me in the weeklies, which unfortunately in our industry, people mm-hmm. think are the news. And so it was just coming at me from all ends. And then I found out even later of the overseas push to do memes and cartoons where I'm dressed as an ISIS member, and I'm, you know, a decapitator running around decapitating people. And it got so crazy. And they just threw the kitchen sink at me. And people wanted to eat it up. I mean, the Fox News people ate it up and the Breitbart people ate it up. And then I had to learn all the, like, I had to learn all the Nazi groups that I didn't know have YouTube shows.
Right.
And I had to learn all the, you know, the MAGA people. I didn't even know what 4chan was. I didn't know this 4chan, 8chan, 16chan world.
I still
world.
Don't know the chans.
I'm scared of the chans.
I know
I'm scared
a man
of...
named Kyle Chan that does the jewelry design. But
that's
fine. All I
he
know.
Is. I have no issue with him. But no, I did. I've never been on Reddit. Like mm-hmm. I didn't even know this was a thing where Americans go on these websites I've never heard of and they just make up this. It's the same crowd that thought Hillary Clinton was having a sex ring in a pizza parlor. Like I was then lumped in with that crowd.
Well, let me ask you this question. In your documentary, which is titled A Hell of a Story, which is
it
phenomenal.
Is. It's a hell of a story.
See, yeah, hallelujah. You tell the truth on that one. When this all begins to pile on you, it takes an emotional toll on you as it would on any person. Looking back at it, were there any things that you would have done differently to protect yourself emotionally?
Oh, a million things. First of all, I can sort of laugh now, but just the coincidence that my actual First Amendment attorney, who's won Supreme Court cases, was at a funeral and had his phone turned off. And mm-hmm. so the only lawyer who called me was Lisa Bloom. And I had met her one time when I was on AM Joy on MSNBC. And I'm just going to be honest. I had a terrible experience with her, and I feel fine saying that, and I would not recommend her to my worst enemy. And
I just took her off my call list.
I got bloomed. And she's the one, she's the only one who reached out, and everything was going crazy, and I got fired on CNN, and everything was on the ticker, and all this stuff. And I was the lead story, you know, on, someone told me I was the lead story on Fox for 17 days in a row. And it just kept snowballing.
That's heavy.
It's heavy because you don't know who's believing what. And then people hear a part of the story because people have lives. They don't have time to focus on the details.
Well, girl, and when the government is coming for you, who do you, I mean, I would be paranoid in a way well. Did you think like your phones are being tapped?
Well, they told me they could be. So what happened was they just opened an investigation without ever, you know, calling me or, like I said, they didn't follow the normal protocol. Mm-hmm. So I personally think to this day, because I've known the Donald off and on for 25 years. Like one time, I was never a cast member on The Apprentice, but I was on it twice as part of challenges. Like one time I was on as part of a challenge for my beloved Joan Rivers.
Yes.
And another time he personally asked me to roast him as part of one of the challenges for The Apprentice. So it's not like he doesn't know my shtick. And I would run into him at NBC Universal events when I was on Bravo and he was doing The Apprentice and stuff. And he was just this like orange, weird, like realtor. Like, I mean, you know, I didn't know he had this amount of venom inside him or anything like that. But it's not like we were friendly. But it also isn't like he could possibly think like I'm actually a threat to him. So they opened the investigation. And it was by two federal agencies, the Secret Service and the AUSA. And that's the part that is truly historic. And I even called Jane Fonda and I said, is this what happened to you? And even she said, I had the local PD arrest me. She goes, I didn't have the feds coming after me. And then I was put on the no-fly list for 2 months.
So all this came down on you while you were here in the U.S. And then I saw that you wrote a comedy show and you decided, you know what? If I can't do this in the U.S., I'm out of here. I'm going overseas.
Right.
And you did, what, like 15, 18 countries?
Yeah, I think I did something like 17 countries. And I specifically called my then agent and I said, you know, can we find countries where we know they don't like Trump? Mm-hmm. And that was easy. There's a lot. And then, you know, that was a difficult tour. And
now,
that's why I wanted
that
to
difficult?
Show.
You showed this in your documentary, that it was difficult. Tell me right here.
Okay.
How was that difficult? Because I've traveled as well. Last year, I did 184 cities around the world. Crazy tour.
Good for you.
Girl, happily
booked.
Good for
you.
Happily booked. But no one understands.
It's a grind. And a happy grind. Because
yes,
we love it. But
thankful.
It's a grind. And you have to eat a certain way. You have to kind of treat your body like you're an athlete.
Yes.
I'm 58 years old. I can't, you know, eat junk food like I used
to. And then you got to show up and you got to be funny.
Yeah. No matter what. No matter what happened at 5 to 8, you got to flick the switch at 8 o'clock.
So here you are on a comedy tour being funny with a great show. And I understand, like, when little things go wrong, let's just say, you know, oh, I don't get the upgrade or
yeah.
the meal wasn't the right meal.
Right.
That can throw you. You were being detained.
Yeah.
Walk me through that experience.
So I found out that when I was taken off the fly list, and I was also interrogated under oath by the feds, because a lot of people think that didn't happen or that, once again, I just, you know, kind of, there was a series of phone calls. They were determined to put me under oath, and they were thinking of charging me with conspiracy to assassinate the president of the United States, which holds a lifetime sentence.
Because you took a picture with some ketchup on it.
That's right.
Of the president.
Which
and
was totally covered by the First Amendment. Like, one of the reasons I made the film, too, is, and I say this in the film, if you or you have a 13-year-old kid and they put that same picture up online on their social media, they should not have to go through this. You can hate the picture and that doesn't bother me at all. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. But I didn't break the law. People thought I broke the law. Mm-hmm. I didn't violate the First Amendment. You know, people thought I violated the First Amendment. And I certainly was not a legitimate threat to the president.
Well, where was this outrage when people going in on Bill Clinton, when people were going in on Obama,
yeah.
Michelle Obama?
Well, one of the reasons I did it is I remember that all that memosphere with people putting the Obama in a noose and all the like real threats. I remember when the Tea Party started, they would have marches with, you know, with their guns out near the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama would, you know, he'd have to attend events in open carry states. And the Tea Party was like gathering steam. So one of the reasons I also made it was like, yeah, I just like everybody else, I don't want to see any more pictures of Michelle Obama as a freaking monkey. And I don't want to see all that stuff. And I don't know about you, but like the whole 8 years of Obama, I was always afraid he was going to be assassinated. Like,
being a black person from the South as well, like my grandma, she had never really been a big active participant in voting.
Yeah.
And I remember she called me and said, I went to the polls today and I stood in line and she voted for Obama because she wanted to see a black president.
Of course.
But his entire reign, she goes, they're going to try to assassinate him.
Yeah.
That's because as a community, that was our fear that the majority there. First of all, we wanted Obama and we wanted to see a black president. That would be amazing. But when he got in there, there was always this constant, like, they're going to try to assassinate
him. Oh,
yeah. For sure.
And also, remember, like, you know, like the memosphere was horrible to him from the right. They weren't, I don't think there was many far right crazies coming out of the woodwork as there are now, because obviously Trump has just made it game on.
Right.
But, you know, I am not like a big Facebooker and stuff, but I had to learn about all these groups because they were all coming at me. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn like who could call a dog whistle and who couldn't, who had enough power online to, you know, get who knows how many troll accounts to come after me. Like, I'm telling you, you post this and I'm going to apologize right now. You are going to get bombarded with trolls and bots. Wait. And it's going to be in broken English, but they're going to say like, how could you have that, you know, ISIS traitor or whatever. And just try to laugh because it still goes on and it's still crazy.
So they had the nerve to put you on a no-fly list.
No-fly list, like a terrorist. Like a terrorist. Like,
so when I go to London, for example,
yeah,
and we show up and we have the work visa,
yeah,
we get there, show the work visa, we have to sit in this little like pen area and wait until they come back and mm-hmm. have the approval. And I've had friends before that didn't get the work visa because the promoters were like, oh, you won't need it.
Right.
They show
right.
up with merch and then the customs people go through and they're like, oh,
gotta
what are
get
you
that
doing
work
with this
visa
merch?
Every time.
Honey, thank you for
I
the
know,
lesson.
I know.
But that's not, I won't just say annoying, but that can be jarring to
sit
because
there. You may, sometimes if you're traveling on show day, you're like, uh-oh, I got a show day to clock.
How long would they detain you?
Okay, so first of all, I found out that I was put on the Interpol list. So I was detained at LAX.
Like Pink Panther Interpol?
Yeah, like Interpol list, like the agencies that work with overseas looking for terrorists.
Gotcha,
for real.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, I filed 3 Freedom of Information Acts. I haven't gotten one back, so they're obviously slow walking it. To this day, I don't know what they put on my passport, but I was detained leaving LAX. And another reason I wanted to say this in the film is, remember the Muslim ban, and then there was a lot of like, you know, United States senators going to the airport and they couldn't even get to these people and stuff. And then there were, I started hearing like, well, after that, they couldn't take people's phones and SIM cards. So I found out that's not true. So I went to, every time I was detained, they would take my phone, take my SIM card. So I'm assuming they cloned my phone mm-hmm. and take my passport. Never told me why. And the first person would look at it and then call the supervisor. And then I would go into a detention room. And, you know, sometimes like in Singapore, it was 6 hours on a show day. And I was like, oh, no.
So then you still have to, did you make it to the show?
Made it to the show, didn't miss a single show.
Good thing you had to get in drag.
Right? I'm telling you. Well, I would also, by the way, I also learned to travel in my show off in makeup.
Really?
Like, yeah, after a while, I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to play with thinking I even have, like, 45 minutes to even, like, throw some makeup on.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, maybe it didn't help I was in the blue dress from the picture. However, the audience loved it.
It's me, guys. It's
Hi,
me.
It's really me. And so I was, you know, scared to ask questions. So I admit, I never had the balls to say when they would give me my stuff back, like, can you please tell me what's on there? Because I was too afraid to.
Right.
And
no,
I just thought, let
get
me get through this tour.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finally returned to LAX, I hired an even separate security company to meet me at the plane because I thought this is going to be their last chance to mess with me. And I was really afraid. And same thing, I was stopped but got through and stuff. And, you know, it was just not something that somebody should have to go through. Because
no,
being
also
on the Interpol list, like, I don't know even what that means. I don't know what they even put on the passport, but it scared everybody enough to detain me. And they would just silently hand me my stuff back and tell me I could go. And, honey, I was out of there. I wasn't just like, I demand answers. But it was certainly not something, I'll be honest, I didn't think it would happen at London Heathrow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it would happen at Dublin. And it happened everywhere. So, you know, that's not something that I ever could have planned for or expected.
I can't imagine the feeling of sitting there for 6 hours, not knowing if you're going to be turned around, if you're not going to be able to do
that. In Singapore,
it's
illegal
to
be gay. It's illegal to, you know, chew gum and spit and all that stuff. And I'm not saying anything against the Singaporeans. I'm just saying that is the type of government where you are on your own. So
mm-hmm.
what I started to do is I got a lot of really great advice. I talked to a lot of former CIA folks, FBI, even Homeland Security. And it was actually Jay Johnson's former right-hand man, the former Homeland Homeland Security Secretary under Obama, not Kirstjen Nielsen with the kids in cages. And he was the one who said, no, no, make no mistake about it. They can take your phone and your SIM card at any and every airport. So I'm really glad that he told me that. So I was prepared for it.
Well, I think you are now one of the most well-informed passengers, international
Absolutely.
Travel divas. Honey, if
get
I
your
ever
papers
have an
in order.
If I ever have a question, I'm calling Kathy Griffin.
Oh, okay. So here's what else I learned, and I didn't have time to put this in the film. But
exclusive, everybody.
Exclusive. And I also learned, and I had several, like I said, retired feds tell me, what you should do is prior to leaving any country, you should notify two of the local journalists, because I was doing phoners like crazy. I mean, I was hustling this tour like crazy and mailing list and text list and whatever I could do. So I was doing interviews like, you know how it is. You do the morning radio shows or whatever. And so someone said you need to give two of the local journalists where you're leaving your itinerary, two journalists to the country you're going to, and two journalists that are independent in the United States. So I got in the habit, and then I befriended a former CIA officer, and I said, do you mind if I send you my itinerary every time? And he was so sweet. He was like, I'm honored. And he said, because this is what you're going to need. If you get stopped and nobody can find you and you are, like, missing, you want press to say, Kathy Griffin's missing.
Yes.
You know, and even he was saying, like, I know you didn't do anything wrong. I know you didn't break the law. But I also know once you're on the Interpol list, you're at the mercy of maybe three or four people at the airport. Mm-hmm. So it was a whole system where I'm sending my itinerary out. When I came home, I sent my itinerary out to criminal attorneys because I thought, my gosh, what if they stop me at LAX and try to charge me with a freaking crime? On top of everything else.
With all of that,
I covered my bases.
Oh, honey, I'm learning. I'm taking notes, okay? With all of that going on, and you've been traveling for years.
Yeah.
How do you keep your sanity on the road?
You know, it's when you love it, you just love it. Mm-hmm. And I always say to, like, any young comics coming up or anything, I'm honest. I say you better love it because, you know, you're going to tank more than you do well. You're going to, you know, not every show is going to be great and all this stuff. But if you really love it, it's worth it. It just kept me going. And also, I got to write so much more material that, no joke, the tour started as 2 hours, and it ballooned to, like, some nights I would do 3 hours and 40 minutes. And I would even have to say to the audience, like, you guys, I clearly have a stand-up comedy disorder. If you have dinner reservations, I'm not going to take it personally. You can leave. But people really stayed. Because sometimes there'd be, you know, a new piece of information. Or, you know, Don Jr. would tweet about me. Mm-hmm. Or Sean Hannity would write a blog about me. Or I'd find out I was on the radar of the freaking Charlottesville marchers. And then those guys all had to take their turn with me and stuff.
Well, I have to say, major kudos to you. I live in Jennifer Lewis. Well, I call it Pool House. She calls it the dungeon.
That's right.
But and she came home one night and she said, honey, I just saw Kathy Griffin hold court and hold the, I don't know too many comedians. She said, I bow down. I don't know too many comedians who can hold a room like that, can hold a large, when you did the show here in LA, she held the Dolby, honey, for 3 hours.
I was so happy Jennifer came. I mean, I've known Jennifer for so long, and she's just the real deal, and she really gets it. And I was so happy she came. And yeah, you just do what you have to do. And I felt like, honestly, I had so many death threats. I for real treated every show like it might be my last.
Wow.
I mean, I had incidents at almost every show in the States.
When you say incidents, what do you mean by that?
In Houston, I had a guy pull a knife on me. And
how?
First of all, it's actually online because someone tweeted me about it or something, and then I went on YouTube and there's a video of it. And there's a guy showed up, and I played a gorgeous venue in Houston. It was either Symphony Hall or the Opera House, because that's one of the other things I did is I wanted to play what I call the great halls because I knew this material was controversial. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, you just get a different kind of fan if they've paid like $200 for a ticket to Carnegie Hall, then you're less likely to get like the freaky guy on YouTube in his basement thinking that, you know, Hillary Clinton is killing people in pizza parlors. And so there's video of this guy. He shows up to the show. He's wearing a MAGA hat, of course, and shirt with pictures of Trump all over it. And he's just waving a knife in front, and the audience is like leaving the venue like, what's going on?
Wait, is this during the actual show?
After the show. And then two fans find a security guy, and it's really frightening. They're trying to tell the security guy, and they're describing him. And you see this poor security guy just going like, okay, keep driving. Like, you know, if he's close to you, he might come after you and stuff. And, you know, there was a guy that came to my Philadelphia show that had a GoFundMe from some crazy right-wing group. And so they bought him a plane ticket so he could go to my Philadelphia show, sit in the second row, and then start shouting that I was a pedophile at the top of his lungs.
And what do we do about this? Do you have a security guard?
Honey,
that comes and
let me tell you
them?
What I got down.
I've been down. Heckled
before.
Oh, in
yes.
Show.
I am telling you, every single country, every city, we got the incidents down where nothing took more than 90 seconds. That person was bounced. Randy is my boyfriend and tour manager. No
yes.
shame. And we would have, he always has a security meeting before the shows anyway. And then I started joining him because I needed these security folks to see me as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I would then say, like, look at me, I'm 5'3", you know, 105 or whatever. Like, really, I don't want to say anything can happen, but please, like, understand, I'm sorry to say, this isn't a normal show.
No,
this
protect isn't... me. I'm your sister.
Yeah.
I'm your mother.
The same
I'm
Blue
your
Man
friend.
Group
I'm
and
your
Stomp. Okay. We don't know who's coming in tonight.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that was just so insane. And so we were able to bounce that guy from the second row very quickly. And I mean, I'm kind of laughing now because what they do is the whole time you're seriously gently escorting them out, they're filming themselves going, I'm being abused at the Kathy Griffin show. I'm, and you can see the guy's just being like walked out, you
so
know?
We're offering you a glass of champagne and
right,
a trip
right.
to the green room. What are you talking about?
Exactly. I'll comp you for the next show.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24, Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
When you look at your career, mm-hmm. and you started, you know, working with the Groundlings group, right?
Yes.
The improv group
yeah.
here. Was it in Chicago or was it here in L.A.?
Well, I'm from Chicago and they had Second City.
Okay.
So I moved to Los Angeles with my mom and dad when I was 18. And I grew up loving improv and sketches. And so they didn't have Second City here. So I looked in the L.A. Weekly and I see, oh, there's this group called the Groundlings. And I think I went to a Groundlings show like my first weekend in Los Angeles. And I don't know about when you moved here, but I'm from Illinois. It was like another planet to be in Los
yeah.
Angeles.
Oh, I'm originally from Paris, Texas. Okay.
Okay.
So coming from Paris, Texas, then I moved to Dallas and I came here.
Right.
It was like
I've
a
landed
ship.
On the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
NASA.
Right? It's like when you're from Illinois, this is like another planet. And so I went to the Groundlings and I just thought it was the greatest thing and I wanted to get involved. And as my mother would say, bold as brass, I walked backstage and I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know anybody, obviously.
Did anyone ever take you under their wing? Did you seek out anyone?
Kinda. I mean, I always seek out mentors. I really mm-hmm. I reach out to people in all kinds of different ways. And I went backstage and I went up to who I thought was the funniest guy in the whole show. And I'm in the dressing room, like totally inappropriate. And it's just the Groundlings. It's not like some super duper fancy theater, but it's a ton of talent. And I said, hi, you know, my name is Kathy. I just moved here and I just think this is the most amazing thing. Is there, how do I get involved? And he's like, well, there's a school and you take these levels of classes. And he like walked me through. He's so sweet. And that was Phil Hartman.
Wow.
I know. So the first Groundling I ever met was the late, great Phil Hartman. And so it was a great time to be there. And I was in the company with everybody from, you know, Lisa Kudrow to my friend Julia Sweeney, who went on to be, you know, It's Pat and stuff. And then later on, I became a teacher and it was my day job. And that was just as fun. I mean, my students were everybody from Will Ferrell to Sherry O'Terry. And, you know, like a lot of them went on to become writers on big shows. And I really enjoyed teaching improv as well. And then later on, I was like, okay, this has been great. I've been doing it for years. And I asked the Groundlings, I said, can I open the show with like a story. And honestly, that's how I got into stand-up. I got into stand-up really late. Like I was already in SAG and doing commercials and stuff. And that's really kind of what turned things around for me is, you know, in Hollywood, it's like they don't know what to do with you.
Right.
And I mean, I love sketch, but also sometimes they don't know who you are. I'm wearing, you know, I used to call it big wigs and banjos. So, you know, I'm doing all these characters, but they're like, which one were you? You know? And so I have to say, when I started doing stand-up, I finally started getting offers, and I did like 5 sitcom guest spots in 1 year. And the next year I just hit the jackpot by getting cast on Suddenly Susan. And in those days, doing 23 episodes a year, those days are gone, but they were heaven.
Yes.
And you know, then when that ended after 4 years, then I started my life on the D-list.
How did that come about?
That was, you know, it's funny. Jeff Zucker, one of my nemeses right now, Jeff Zucker actually hired me. And
over at Bravo.
Jeff was the head of NBC at the time.
Okay.
So he came to see me because after Suddenly Susan, I thought I was just going to go on to my next sitcom and do 23 episodes a year and everything. I couldn't get arrested. I mean, I spent a year sleeping till 1, watching Oprah and eating ice cream. I mean, I just, it was Kathy Who. And
how
so I thought.
How do you navigate those? And
okay.
I'm gonna come back to that. How do you navigate those highs and lows? Because I'm also
You figure it out. Because as you know, it's a fallacy that people are going to do it for you. And I'm sorry, but, you know, agents don't really get you work. Like they can help facilitate deals and stuff like that. But like I came here from Illinois thinking like I just have to sit near my phone and agents are going to call with offers and I'll decide. No, you get your hustle on. You make it so easy for them that it's like you put what you have to offer on a silver platter and go, this is what I do. And that's what stand-up did for me. It made the industry be able to go, oh, I can look at a 15-minute, you know, live performance of her doing stand-up. And I started doing stand-up in theaters. But prior to that, when I couldn't get arrested, I actually called Jamie Masada at the Laugh Factory here in Los Angeles on the Sunset Strip. And I said, what's your worst time slot? And he goes, I don't know, Wednesdays at 10 p.m. I go, I'll take it. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I started doing a show every Wednesday at 10 p.m. at the Laugh Factory. And then it kind of caught on. And then there were lines around the block. And it became like this hot ticket. And so one night Zucker came. And the next day we had a meeting in his office and I went by myself because none of my agents were available. So once again, it's just me and Zucker and I'm ready to make a deal, honey. Like I'm not here to chat, you know, like let's put some numbers on the table. What do you have in writing? And originally they were going to do like an expensive, fancy 4-camera sitcom based on my life, like a female version of Seinfeld or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, this is a dream. And it was funny because I said, well, I met with Kelsey Grammer earlier and Kelsey wants to produce it. And I'll never forget Zucker going, fuck Kelsey, I'm producing it. I go, Jeff, he's your buddy that you drove to my show last night. And so there's a little insight into the cutthroat of Hollywood. But anyway, so then they thought about it and thought about it. And then at the very same time, Nick and Jessica took off and Osbournes. And that's when Jeff came to me and said, and this is so flattering, you know, we don't think you need like a big $1 million an episode sitcom. We think we can just save a whole bunch of money and you're naturally funny and we'll just have some cameras follow you around in your real life for 6 months. And, you know, at first I was like, what? What about the big set and guest stars? He's like, nope. And so
reality
was born. And honestly, it was really hard work. They would follow me around for 6 months. Season one was only 6 episodes. And then usually I think they only did 8 episodes a year.
Girl, you were the original Kardashian. You were.
You know what? I don't think I. And by the way, and then I won 2 Emmys. Thank you.
Hello.
Thank
Hallelu.
You. Thank All you. Right. You know, I don't think they would even let me do that show now. Like, I have to say that show was real. Like, first, you know, my joke is just go by my parents alone. Like those two alcoholics, God love them. May my dad rest in peace. But it's like just based on my parents, if you think I could get those two to be like scripted, no. Like there's my proof. And also, it didn't occur to me to do what they now call soft scripted, which is all these reality shows where you can see them reading the teleprompter in between and stuff. So it was a tough show to do, but I was proud of it. And I was so glad people liked it. And I was so grateful to like introduce my parents to the world. And they were so naturally funny. And, you know,
have you ever had any reservations about sharing so much of yourself? Do you feel like you
not
have
anymore?
Nothing else
not
to
after this, like not after this. And I mean, that's why this whole experience has been like a blessing and a curse where I'm I'm still blacklisted in television and streaming, and nobody will take my call, and they all think I'm toxic, and it's all the, I call them the old white dinosaurs. It's the same check signers who told me 20 years ago my nose was too big and I'm too ugly and all this stuff. You know, in the meantime, I've made about $75 million over my career.
Yes, ma'am.
And I don't even have an agent.
Yes,
ma'am. I don't have an agent.
Can I high-five you?
Yes! Ooh, I insist. Yes.
See, this is what I'm talking about, because a lot of
But I have a publicist,
things,
and they're wonderful, called BWR. But honestly, I want to seriously thank my publicist, because I couldn't get a publicist for almost 2 years because I was, quote, toxic. And I'm like, no, I, you know, the overseas tour did well. It grossed, the overseas and American tour ended up grossing $4.4 million. And my overhead's nothing. It's like me in a bottle of water. I mean, I really just stand there and tell stories.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I tell everyone, or at least when people ask me, like, oh, you know, you travel all the time, you do all this stuff, we say you do. I think it's, at this point in my career, and all of them have been doing this for like 9 years, okay? So I'm kind of a baby, don't look at me bad.
I've learned so much
in that amount of time. And a big part of what I learned is that, you know, a major portion of it is your talent and your entertainment, but you also have to learn how to be a smart business person.
Yes.
I've gotten run over a couple times. I've made some misfires. I forgot to have certain conversations before, or have things aligned before having the conversation.
Do you find yourself telling people starting show business?
Well, that's what I was
going
to ask you.
It's show business.
What do you feel that you've learned as a business person?
Oh my gosh. I changed my entire business model. And I have to say, I have loved it. I've been pals with Susie Orman, the financial guru.
Oh, yes, please, Susie.
Queen of the lesbians, honey. Queen of the lesbians. Never, those lesbians will never steer you wrong, honey. They got that money down to the penny. They can flip a house for a nickel. All right, so anyway, because I was so, quote, toxic, I learned, first of all, I had to remarket myself. And so LA and New York marketing firms honestly didn't know what to do with me. They just didn't. They were like, people think you're in ISIS and it's global and, you know, you've got the president personally making you unemployed. Uninsurable. There's hit pieces about you on TMZ constantly. Hit pieces about you and, you know, OK and Life in Style. I didn't know that they were owned by AMI, who then later flipped in the Mueller case. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that Harvey Levin was such a huge, I knew he was a Trump fan, which I thought was weird as a gay man.
Right.
I tried to talk him out of it. But he just, I did. I was like, you're a gay man.
Girl, I've had this conversation. I was in Columbia, South Carolina. There was a little young little boy. He said, I work for the Trump administration. I said, but girl, you're gay. He goes, yeah, but he supports gay people. He just doesn't put it out. I said, if you don't quit, get out of here with all that. Mrs. Thing.
I know. And then do you find yourself, then you have to send them articles.
Well, yeah,
it's like, okay, here's this article about,
now.
Right? About,
and the
okay.
Guy's like, well, at this point now, he's come a little closer. He's like, yeah, you're actually right. Well, we don't always see eye to eye on everything. Girl.
Oh, no. He's coming for the gays.
Yeah.
He initially started coming for brown people, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the internment camps, and I can't even believe it. Like the shame, like don't you almost feel like personally, like the shame I just feel as an American, like
internationally,
oh my
God. Going to all different countries, and we used to be so, I was so proud to be an American.
Yes.
I'm still proud to be an American, because I don't think that Trump represents all of America.
At all.
And what I
no
believe
way.
In American, who I've, you know, become as a person, as an American.
Yeah.
But it does suck going to like London, or they got their own problems.
Yeah.
But going to other places and being like, okay, first of all, let me apologize.
Oh, me too. I'm on the apology tour. I played Mexico and I said Lo Siento for 2 hours. Lo Siento.
Yes.
But let me ask you this. As a person of color, do you feel like things have gone back for you? Meaning, are you more fearful if you're driving down the street than you were during the Obama years?
No. I feel, and I don't speak for every person of color, but for me, I feel even more empowered in this moment, because it's forced a lot of people who would have been docile and quiet and not outspoken, or maybe even still sided with, you know, Trump. Because I'm, oh, honey, after the, now you can get me going. Right after the election, and I remember I literally woke up during the final moments, and I was like, that can't be.
Right.
That can't be right. That's can't be right. And
well,
I just,
by the way,
I couldn't
it
deal with it. My
it
head,
wasn't like
no,
there
it
was
not.
Legit interference from a foreign government. We don't hate the Russian people, okay? We don't hate the Chinese people, but it has been proven they are indictments. There was actual interference.
Collusion.
That is not,
you heard it here first.
That
collusion.
Is not a conspiracy theory. There's indictments. The GRU is the Russian version of the CIA. That's how deep it goes. Okay.
Wow. But as a person of color, I just feel like more people have now been forced to have conversations they may not have had. And I don't, have more fear, although I'm more aware.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know all these people existed.
Right.
There were all these MAGA people.
Me either.
And I didn't realize how strong that the sentiment against people of color,
yeah,
against women,
yeah,
against people who would say, oh, Hillary can't be president, she's a woman. And right. I'm literally looking at them like,
I know.
What year is this?
I know.
Are you kidding me?
I know.
Are you people even
women,
in my
oh,
family?
They're so moody.
Yeah.
They can't be. Or my favorite would be like the ones that wouldn't vote for Hillary, and I'd say why. And they'd be like, I don't know. I just can't put my finger on it. How about misogyny and ageism? Let's go there.
There you go.
And do you feel like that, like these kind of cockroaches have come out because we put the light on?
Well, yeah, they've been forced out.
Yeah.
And I think they feel empowered, too, because of
oh,
Trump.
Oh, yeah, of
you know,
course.
The way that he talks, the rhetoric that
he's
uses.
He's retweeting white supremacists.
Of course. And that empowers them to
yeah.
come out more. But you know what? That has forced other people who are against that
yeah.
to come out even more.
Yes.
So if that's what we have to do to get to where we're going, it's
mm-hmm.
not a choice I would have wanted us to have to do.
Yeah.
But we're here in this moment. Let's just get him out, please.
Right, right.
And let's get it done.
Yeah.
That being said,
yes.
watch this segue. This is a segue, y'all. Watch this segue. In your documentary,
mm-hmm.
which I'm super thrilled for so many people to see. I want everyone to watch this
Thank
documentary.
You. I
guys,
can't believe they're showing it in over 650 theaters across the U.S. Like,
that,
seriously, I'm so, like, flattered and blown away. I can't believe it's real. Seriously.
Well, get me my popcorn, okay? Because we learn, you know, we learn even more about you, more so than even, you know, with my life on the D-list. We got this inside look
well,
at everything
I say
about
it's kind
you,
of like D-list on steroids.
It totally
if you
is.
Like the D-list, this is on steroids. Because it's real, honey.
And
like, you know there's some ugly crying in there. There are some Kathy Griffin, no makeup, ugly crying.
You gave me that good old Blair Witch moment with the snot. We're looking down at the camera with the camera looking up
oh.
the nostrils. I said, yes.
Yes.
It was raw and uncut, which is how
all
most
on the iPhone.
Enjoy.
There was no crew. There was no crew. Nobody would do it.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
iPhone.
Did this idea come from you to create this or spearheaded by you? Because I could tell even when you're
yes.
midway through,
but
I don't
just,
spoil
you know,
anything.
I met with everyone because
yes.
first of all, I said, I'm never going to go back to Unscripted again only because it was so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Having a crew in your house 12 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Girl, I was on
years.
Drag Race three times. I know. I know.
Right.
Sister, I know.
It's a lot. It's a
yes.
lot. And so I thought, okay, I really do have a hell of a story to tell. And so I met with everybody. I met with every network, every production company. I only do meetings in my house.
I
just
want
you to know that.
LA is all meetings.
I only do them at my house, and I'll tell you why. Because I feel that if you are going to like stick to your guns and say, oh, no, I'm not going to meet with you unless you come here, you're not serious.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just willing to make the freaking 20-minute drive to my house, and also, honestly, the death threats were so intense at that time, I had, you know, added security. And I'm like, I don't want to go into a meeting at HBO with security. That's weird and stuff. And so that was one way of weeding out, like, who was serious and who wasn't. But I had several meetings where at the sort of development level, people were saying, yeah, this could be like a show kind of like the Leah Remini Scientology show where you're like revealing something and all this other stuff. But they would kick it up to, as I call the old white dinosaurs, the check signers. And every one of them would be like, I don't even want to hear the pitch. And then they would call me and they'd be like, we'll be honest, it's the check signer. I call them the check signers.
Yeah.
And it's always a white dude. It's always, he's usually about 60. And like I said, most of them I know because they've been, you know, telling me I'm going to be a failure for 20 years anyway. So it does give me more of a fire in my belly. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go on the road and honestly just shoot iPhone stuff. And we didn't have, you know, mic packs or any of that stuff. I mean, the D-list crew was down and dirty. This was literally just us with iPhones. And then
and also laundry. There's a part in the film
Can
where
you, imagine?
You are doing
What
your
will
own
my
laundry.
Fans think of me doing laundry? Can you imagine?
Appalling. I don't want to give it
all away. Appalling.
You know, I'm going to keep some of that because I want you guys to go and see this. But it is such an in-depth and such a behind-the-scenes look at what was a true major moment that people need to see because you say this in the film as well. It could happen to anyone.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, it has. Like, not this exact situation. But, you know, you see him trying to tear down everyone from public figures.
Yes.
I mean, stripping John Brennan of his security clearance, the former CIA director, to, you know, trying to take down Samantha Bee, totally siding with Roseanne. Okay.
Okay.
Don't
right,
even get
right,
me.
Right,
I can't
right.
even.
You know what? Let's go a little lighter.
Okay, sorry.
I'm going to go a little lighter. Look, we went to Roseanne. Now we're going to go a little lighter.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm just saying I did not see that coming.
No.
That coming.
Oh, that was good. Ladies and gentlemen, she's full of jokes. It's Hello. Kathy Griffin Hello. Is here with me today, everybody. You know, you've been a longtime LGBTQ activist.
Yeah.
An advocate for us.
Yeah.
An ally through and through.
And that means, by the way, like, I just want people, because now we're in the era of social media, and I did it before what was called the interweb. That means you got to get out of your house, you got to knock on doors, you got to, yes, march, you got to know your local representatives. I'm all about the down ballot.
Like, well, you
I'm,
did that with I'm, Prop 8. You did it with
absolutely.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
I testified on the Hill. I got kicked out of a meeting.
What?
Because I yelled at Saxby Chambliss. I stood up and I go, oh, be quiet, you old fart, or something like that. And the Capitol Police escorted me out. And I was, by the way, the D-list didn't film. They filmed it, but they were like, we're not showing that part. Like, we don't need to show that part. But yeah, that's what activism is. And this is a time when we have to mobilize. Mm-hmm. And so one thing, you know, in my opinion, this president doesn't, well, I shouldn't discourage people, but unfortunately, the marches don't seem to really change him. But I'll tell you what changes him. It's all about the down ballot. So people love to pick their favorite 2020 presidential. And that's great. We have an amazing stable. We have an embarrassment of riches. But honestly, know your United States senators. Know, you know, I always tell people about county supervisor. People have to remember Kim Davis, who famously would not marry the two guys, that was an elected position. So believe it or not, it takes like a half an hour on the Google machine. And in your district, know your assembly person, know your local congressperson. Look at how hard it was to flip the House. And they still have the Senate. And so we can argue about Nancy all day. But Nancy knows there are no votes in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And at this moment, she doesn't even have the votes in the House. Even AOC did a survey of the freshmen. And there's still a lot of junior congresspeople that are like, hey, I'm going to purple district. So I think my Nancy has a plan. I know everyone's mad at her now, but I think she's like, look, the country is not getting it. And I remember watching the Watergate hearings as a kid. There were three networks and people actually brought the truth. And even Republicans went, oh, now we heard the tape. Well, there wasn't, you know, QAnon theories and the 4chans and the Reddits and the groups that perpetuate these crazy lies. And how about when they, like, manipulate the video where they made Nancy slow down and look like that stuff just wasn't around. So I think we have to get back to true grassroots. And like I said, you know, Indivisible is a great group and they've gone national in all kinds of red cities or Share Blue. Like, find the group that speaks to you.
And you've done great. I saw that your tour, the Laugh Your Head Off tour, made great donations to the Trevor Project as well. That's phenomenal.
And by the way, I just want to say, I also think, like, I'm going
to,
you know, I love to talk
go
about
give
celebrities.
It to me, girl, go
I love to talk.
You know, I was hoping we
okay,
get
can
again.
I just tell you, fuck these celebrities that go, I want a medal because I gave portions of the proceeds. Okay, fuck that. Nobody ever does an audit. When I say I'm giving money, like when I gave 12 grand to Trevor Project, I wrote the check from Kathy Griffin. It wasn't from the Kathy Griffin Foundation, which I don't have. And, you know, I think it's important to support the ACLU. They get a bad rap from the right wing. You know, people love to go, well, they defended this horrible person. Well, it's called the First Amendment. And I'm sorry, but as Larry Flint famously said, if it can protect a pig like me, it can work for you. And people just have to know their history and embrace it. And I've really learned a lot about the dark side of America, unfortunately. But on the other hand, you're right. It is kind of good that they are no longer able to really stay in the shadows. So I follow all this stuff. And I have to be up on who's coming after me this time or who's started this rumor. And who picks up on it, because there wasn't the fake newsy rumor craziness. And it does shock me. Like, what do you think of the millions of Americans that really do believe these insane conspiracy theories? Like, you know, Hillary running a sex ring out of the basement of a pizza shop. Except when the guy with the gun shows up at the pizza shop, there isn't even a basement there.
Well, like, it's because I think people are so – we get our media so quickly now.
Yeah.
And we don't really dive into it as much. It's you could put, like, a post on Instagram.
Yeah.
And people will believe whatever you
they
write
think it's
in
the New York
title
Times.
That it's the New York Times.
Right.
Because a lot of people get their news from their phone and not from news sources on their phone, but from
Facebook
Instagram,
is
from
not
Twitter,
news.
From Facebook.
Instagram is not news.
And I can't tell you how many times we've had to combat different, like, drag race theories or, you know, different rumors about queens because someone just wrote it and it had no merit whatsoever. None.
And some of it, as you know, some of it can really truly affect your family life, your career. Like I said, in my case, it may be unemployable and uninsurable. And, you know, it's hard for people to sometimes put themselves out. And in my case, you know, one thing that I've just been emotionally grappling with, because you were asking me about that, is, and I addressed it kind of briefly in the film, but I really did think at some point enough time is going to pass. I mean, remember, I was completely exonerated. I was interrogated under oath by two federal agencies. I mean, they put me through the mill. And obviously they couldn't find anything because that picture's covered and I'm a wild comic and I have a whole history of doing crazy stuff like this.
Ladies and gentlemen, if the glove didn't fit... If the gloves
they had to acquit.
Yes, they did.
They had to. They didn't want to, but they had to. And so I then honestly thought, you know what? Somebody's going to like take pity on me and just give me five lines on some like top 10 show. And I was so bold and ballsy, and I don't know if it was smart or stupid, but I started just DMing producers and people I don't even know. And I would straight up say, okay, it's now been this many months. You know, my inner Joan Rivers has to work all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just thinking like, I haven't not worked since I was 16. I don't know what to do with myself. And the whole time I'm writing material in my head, but I can't get it out. And you know that horrible feeling. Like, yes. I'm sure you have times even between gigs, as much as you gig, you're like, oh, I almost wish I had a show tonight because I really want to talk about this funny thing. So to have that taken away overnight based on a lie is a big thing to get over. And it's not just the emotional part. You know, I did shameless outreach. And I got to tell you, I appreciated the people that were honest. You know, like there'd be some really powerful producers that would say, I totally want you on the show. And I ran it up the food chain and they said no. And then I had another very powerful producer say, and I'm going to be honest, and this was probably a year after the photo, he said, I even made calls to other networks because I so believe that what you went through just doesn't matter if you like me or the picture. It just shouldn't happen in America.
It's wrong.
And he said, Kathy, you're right. They don't even want to hear your name. And that's when I thought, okay, so the tour grossed $4.4 million. They don't care. The agents still took 10%. That didn't seem to move the dial either. Mm-hmm. And I thought, but the people know there's a story there. And that's when I thought, well, show business means when you make money, save it.
Hallelujah.
Do not think you're going to, if you have a good year, don't expect every year to be that. And I just am very open about money because I always say I've saved my money. I am my mother's daughter, depression parents, and use it up, wear it out, make it do. Save your money for a rainy day because I had a monsoon. And thank God, because I've just been bleeding money for the last 2 years. But I'm just determined, and I was determined to make this film using my own money. I hired a great blue chip director named Troy Miller. And then BWR, my publicist, got it accepted into South by Southwest, which I couldn't believe.
Major film festival.
Major.
Awesome. Yeah, so
and
major.
I don't know anything about movies. Like, I'm a TV animal. So I didn't even know what to do or how to act or I don't know any distributors and I don't know how to invite them or anything. So got some good buzz there. And then I got 7 freaking offers and none of them even came to the screenings. They just heard the good buzz. And so I ended up going with this company, Fathom, and I didn't even know that this was a thing. Mm-hmm. So they do this thing, which my assistant Caleb was telling me that he goes all the time. It's called Fathom Events. And they pick a movie and they do one night, one showing, and then they do a live Q&A afterwards. So they'll show like Steel Magnolias for one night, and then they'll have like a cast member do a live Q&A and they'll pump it out to every one of the theaters. So that was the best offer. So it's going to go to, like I said, over 650 theaters.
Okay.
Red, purple, blue, July 31st. And then for 20 minutes after that, I'm going to do a Q&A that's going to be pumped into the theaters. And then what I'm also excited about is prior.
You're like Oprah. When they
right?
see us, when they see us now, find yeah. Neverland, never leaving Neverland.
I
or whatever.
Know. Did you watch the specials too?
Oh, yes. You know, I can't keep my eyes off stuff like that. I'm
me
very
either.
Interested because it's gut-wrenching to me because.
But it's real though.
Yes.
And you talk about conversations we need to have. Like, really. I mean, just both of those Neverland and When They See Us, so powerful and so important. By the way, on a side note, and God knows I've made fun of Oprah more than anybody, I really, really miss her daytime show. Mm-hmm. Like, there just isn't a show anymore that goes into those issues. Like, you know, Oprah, one day she'd have, you know, a show about makeovers, but then the next day she'd have, you know, she'd have people that had, I'm sure she would have covered Charlottesville for like a week
for
and
sure.
stuff. And I really...
From Charlottesville.
Right?
Live in
yes,
front of them
and she
all,
would
yes.
have like called those cops that didn't do anything. Like, I'm sorry, I have issues with that. Like, why were those cops just standing to the side? And don't get me started. But anyway, So it's good to shine a light on all this stuff. And that's kind of who I want to be. Like, I'm willing to be the test case and say, this happened, and I'm going to walk you through it.
One thing you also shined a light on, I know we're a little short on time now, so I want to get this in here real quick. I was going to go in because I was hosting the New York GLAAD Awards recently.
Yeah.
With Madonna was there.
Okay? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, honey.
What?
Yes, girl. And, you know, at the end.
I've never met her.
No, you haven't?
And I'm, like, afraid to meet her because I worship her so much.
She was amazing.
What's it like when she walks up? What happens? So you say.
Okay. So they brought her out right before her moment.
Entourage or no?
On stage. Entourage, yes. Okay. And they all seat there. And she had three people that were going to speak before she came on, right?
Yeah.
And after she gave her speech, which was amazing.
Yeah. She's really smart.
They're like, she's not leaving and we have to end the show. And so they asked me, Shangela, can you go out there? I was like, of course, with Madonna, yes. Oh, I want this shot, honey. So I go out there in my
that
little
stereo. That is a picture.
And I'm like, thank you guys so much for watching tonight and make sure you tune in. And I want to thank Madonna. And then I said, Madonna, look, my mom's here. She came all the way from Paris. Say hi. And she was like, hi, Mama.
Oh.
Because I told you, it's like super Madonna. Amazing.
That's your Christmas
celebrity.
Card. Are you kidding me? That is your wallpaper.
You. Thank
and I don't mean
you.
On your phone. I mean your actual wallpaper.
Well, she was phenomenal. But I wanted to ask you, because you've been so outspoken about a lot of things, and one of those specifically that caught my eye.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this is funny. I said caught my eye. Because it's about LASIK surgery.
Yeah.
I was going to go in and have LASIK. So I was hosting those awards, and what made me really nervous, my first time hosting, my vision, as time has gone on, hasn't gotten any better. Okay?
Yeah, and you can't see the teleprompters clearly.
And they put it way in the back of the room. So
yes.
I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able
to
see.
Am I doing the glasses? Glasses on and off 50 times.
Exactly.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not a contacts person,
mm-hmm.
so I was like, I'll just go in and get LASIK.
Yeah.
And they did the eye exam and said that my right cornea was too thin to have that particular surgery.
That's a gift.
What
happened was
so
I got it, and
it?
The doctor was named Robert Maloney, and I'm just saying I have my First Amendment right to say I do not care for him, and I found out
that in L.A., New York?
He's in L.A.,
okay.
And he's at UCLA, and he's a big, rich guy, and there's pictures of private jets on his wall, and he actually had done, I think, three of my friends, so I thought, okay I vetted this guy, and I went in, and I started getting this condition called epithelial cell ingrowth, and I honestly started feeling like I could see almost like a blotch in my left eye,
uh-huh.
and it kept bigger and bigger. And then friends would say, oh, you have something in your eye. Like,
so
it got visible.
Okay.
And so I went back to Dr. Robert Maloney of the Maloney Vision Institute. And, I told him. And he kept doing more surgeries trying to fix it. And I had the most difficult time trying to find a different LASIK surgeon to fix it because they're also afraid of Bausch & Lomb. And, like, you know, I'm not a litigious person, but I just thought I have to get the word out. And so I never sued him, but I sat down and I think I did like 2020 CNN and one on an interview, and they all got scared off. They all wouldn't air them. I sat down with Josh Mankiewicz and like the whole thing because I just wanted to warn people and say, hey, this just isn't for everybody. I'm not totally against it.
Yep.
But interestingly enough, Josh Mankiewicz said, here, I found the form that you sign. You know how it is. You get a facial, you sign like a 20-page
yes.
document. And they said, this has not been FDA approved yet. And FDA? FDA,
yes. Federal drug.
Oh, I sound like a brilliant.
No fly list.
Okay,
joke.
You know, Aunt Becky, get me into USC. Aunt Becky, I'll be on the row team. I do not qualify.
Aunt Becky with the good hair.
That's right. And so, anyway, I just wanted. I wrote about it like on my website at the time, and I took pictures of it and stuff. So yeah, it's one of those things where I think I didn't qualify,
mm-hmm.
and so I think in my humble opinion, the doctor, instead of saying you don't qualify, he just wanted to take the $5,000. And then as I saw LASIK blowing up, and I'm seeing ads for it on the subway in New York, and I thought, gosh, people must, you know, they're going to like a strip mall.
Well, they're thinking like me, like, oh, I have a bad vision. Just
yeah.
Go get LASIK.
No more
two
glasses,
seconds,
heaven.
Done. Yeah.
Right. So I'm just saying, be very careful, do your homework, and, you know, in the end, it's good that you got a doctor who just said you don't really qualify.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, if I could go back to just using my old glasses, I would do it in a heartbeat. So what the other thing is, as you get older, your eyes just age anyway. So the other thing is LASIK doesn't really work past about 35 years old.
Oh,
and
damn.
So, right. And so I now have distance glasses and I call them cheaters.
Yes.
And I just get them at the drugstore because I was losing my prescription ones. But every time I put them on, I'm like, at least I don't have that pain in my left eye. And going through six surgeries, and as you know, for LASIK, you're awake like a clockwork orange. Like, they, like, prop your eye open, and, you know, they put, like, some sort, I don't know if it's like lidocaine or something, right? Like, and I'm like, I'm awake during this, you know?
Oh my God.
So yeah, that was a rough one.
All right, ending on a very fun note.
Good.
My friend Ron Davis, who, when I told him I was interviewing Kathy Griffin Day, he's like, oh my God, love her. We know your former assistant, one of them, I think it's John Raphael or
yes.
someone who loves you.
Good, I love him.
And he said, ask her, NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
Oh boy. Okay. Even though I slept with two NSYNCers.
Oh, hold on. Let me guess, because I know that there are five.
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't Justin. He's married to Jessica, and you know, I have a feeling you would have told us about that one already.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one down.
One down.
Lance is gay, so it wasn't Lance.
Well.
Oh, Lord.
It was 1998.
We were all gay in 98.
Some people were bi-curious. And Lance Bass, I was hosting the Billboard Awards, and Lance Bass called me after the show and asked me out on a date. And I'm not kidding. So we're really good friends now, and my joke about Lance is, I've known you since you were banging chicks. And so I will say we never consummated. And I will say with Joey, we only went to second base, which I believe is feeling up boobs, but it's a point of pride because when I was like,
two out of five ain't bad. Sister.
No, it's good. I would have gone through the whole group.
Oh, yes.
I would have done the Boston Pops. And also the really twisted part is I remember when I was like having my little like non-fling with Joey, I think I was like 34. And I remember saying to him like, you know, I'm 28. And I'll never forget his response. He goes, it's okay. I like older women. One time I was with a lady who was 24. And I was like, oh, I'm 27. Did I say 28? Okay, so.
That's when you put the lamps on and turn the headlights
there,
on.
And there's a scarf over the lamp.
Yes.
And it's like a filter.
The original filter.
The original, the Sybil Shepherd. And so I will say, at the risk of making enemies, I probably ultimately listened to more Backstreet, I mean BSB. And by the way, if you have, like, one of the most fun things you can do for any kind of entertainment, fan or not, is go to a Backstreet Boys concert.
Oh my gosh, I saw them.
Oh no, we middle-aged bitches lose our shit.
Don't
like,
girl,
you kids think you're so wild with your EDM music or whatever. Oh no, honey, you cannot touch us middle-aged crazy bitches, because even at 58, I still think like I'm gonna probably marry one of the Backstreet Boys, and we are like animals. So it's all women my age, and we're screaming like we're 17, and the poor guys all know it. They're like, oh my God, we're getting Me Too'd by a stadium. There's a stadium full of middle-aged women that are Me Too-ing us, and so it is just an experience. And I remember taking my assistant John, and we had gone to see like Gaga and Britney and stuff. And then we go see Backstreet, and he's clutching his invisible pearls, mm-hmm. as sometimes the gay gentlemen are wont to do.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I am never going to a middle-aged concert with you again. This, and we went to see, one time I dragged him to like Foreigner and Journey or something. And he was like, this is terrifying. There are middle-aged men that are taking off their shirts with big pot bellies, and they're putting them like a helicopter. I'm like, oh yeah.
Don't start believing. 58,
we don't give a fuck anymore, honey. We just go and just dance it up. And we all think we're going to bang the band.
Well, honey, let me tell you something. If you are 58, then you better touch me and let me know whatever you're doing to stay so young and fabulous and gorgeous.
I learned it all from Jennifer Lewis.
Ah. Well,
she's my beauty mentor.
She's a high kick. She's 62.
Oh, please, that kick. That kick. Touches the puts a hole in the ceiling.
It does.
That one.
Kathy, it does. I want to thank you so much.
Oh, I just love you. I think
here.
You're so great.
I appreciate it.
And we go way back.
Yes, we do. You know what? Fun fact, everyone. Kathy Griffin was a guest judge on season 2, episode 1 of Drag Race. My first time on the show.
That's right.
My first time. The first episode I came in, and the same episode when I left.
I know. I know. You know what? I got paranoid, and I watched the clip this morning because I was like, oh, no. What if I said something vicious? And luckily, I was actually nice.
No, you were
but
so
trust
nice.
Me, I was willing to come in and be like, I was totally wrong. But, you know, you were robbed. Robbed! But you went back as a big star. It's fabulous.
You're very kind. I thank you. And you know what?
And you won a Shorty Award.
Hallelujah.
Shorty Award.
Which we were just at the Shorty Awards together recently, earlier this year. And Kathy was hosting the awards as well as, you know, what did you, in that room with so many like,
The YouTubers,
the social media. I wasn't as familiar with everyone because I'm not a big YouTuber.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself an influencer and creative. But how do you continue staying like top of mind with even that generation?
The Shane
Dawson.
Because
they all knew you. They were like, Kathy Griffin.
Well,
hi.
You know what I love? They call me mom. And I love it. It's like the first time I went over and performed in Iraq and Afghanistan, they would call me ma'am.
Well, there was an NSYNCer that called you mom. We see how that ended.
Well, you know.
I'm just kidding.
I'm a gay maker. I can make any man gay. Just give me a chance. I remember, like, I will admit the first time, like, you're at a certain age and you're called ma'am, it's kind of a little bit like, I'm not old. And then I was like, you know what? It's a respect issue. You're darn right you're going to call me ma'am. And so I love it. I give all this crap to the YouTubers, and I'm vicious. And they're like, let him have it, mom. And then I'll pick another person to throw shade at. And so I just love it. So Shane Dawson has been really great to me. And I've actually become friends with his mom. And, you know, I just think the whole thing is just so funny because it's really not that different from what we do. Like, mm-hmm. they're performing, and they're doing wacky stuff, and they get in trouble. And I know that world. And so it was kind of like a natural marriage, you know. Also, YouTube has evolved. I mean, a lot of these kids are super enterprising. They're DMing companies and making deals on the side. And, you know, it's definitely changed.
Well, and you, in addition to the documentary, you also are really prevalent on social media now as well. Like, I follow your Instagram.
Good.
And so people, tell me where people who may not know, you're living under a rock somewhere, honey, you don't know where to find Kathy Griffin, the one and only legendary Kathy Griffin.
Oh, okay. Where? Well, first of all, speaking of the LGBTQIA 23456s. The film Kathy Griffin, Hell of a Story is actually going to be in a New York film festival called 51 Fest at the IFC Center. And Tina Brown is hosting that. And it's for like 51% of the voting population is female. Mm-hmm. So that is going to screen there July 18th. Thank you.
Hey.
Then I'm going to fly back to LA, and I'm so excited. It's part of Outfest. So they're showing it at the Outdoor Ford Theater. So come here. Scandal Under the Stars is what I like to call it. And that is July 25th. And then July 31st is when it is in all the theaters, one time only. And then after that, I found out yesterday I got accepted into the Michael Moore Film Festival in Traverse City, which is like all politicos.
Yes.
So I'm really flattered. It's like I got the women, I got the LGBTs, I got the Michael Moore politicos, and then it's going to be in theaters all over America. So I just want people to hear the story because, like you said, it really can happen to you. And it's stuff that we're now seeing all around us. So, mm-hmm. but I hope that you laughed as well because
yes.
I don't want people to think it's going to be like a whole speech about the First Amendment.
Well, but it was very insightful because even I didn't know because I wasn't following at the time so closely because, you know, mom was out here trying to work and trying to make it.
Yeah, of course.
But when you shaved your head, I thought it was a style choice. I thought, oh, okay, she's giving me looks now.
Yeah.
She's turning looks. But you find out in the film that it wasn't just because of that. It actually was not because of that at all. It was because of solidarity with your sister at the time.
Yeah,
right?
My sister passed away from cancer. And, you know, when I found out, it was after the Trump photo, and I just thought, you know, it might crack her up. And, you know, you'll mm-hmm. do anything for a laugh.
Yes, you will.
And so I surprised her. And so, you know.
You also surprised your mother.
Oh, yes. My mother, who I don't think she knew it was me when I first walked out of the room. And she maybe had a little box of wine. You know, no judgment.
Oh, Maggie's known for her
just
box
a
of
little
wine.
Box of wine. And I was like, Kathy, the daughter. It was that going through that, like at the same time, was I just thought, what do I have to lose? Like, I'm mm-hmm. already under this crazy specter, and there's the FBI is coming to my house to warn me about this death threat and that death threat. And I thought, okay, my sister's going through something so much worse. And, you know, I remember she was laughing and rubbing my head and stuff like that. So it was worth it. But yes, at the same time, people were like, she's unhinged, she's pulled to Britney. And, you know, you don't want to get into like the details and my sister's own privacy and stuff.
Right.
But I did think it was important to reveal in the film, though, that even my sister got death threats in the hospital.
It was great. Guys, watch this film. Make sure you catch it at all the great places it's going to be. I'm going to have to come to Outfest, girl.
Please do.
I'm coming to the outdoor theater with my tank top on.
Now, I have to warn you, there may be gay people there.
What?
Yeah, you know how they can be.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to start decorating and laughing, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think any of them will be looking for anyone online, but I hear occasionally there's an app called Grindr. So
if you
try to
find
focus.
A mate, everyone, you can find love at Kathy Griffin's new film, A Hell of a Story, which will be showcasing around the U.S.,
yes.
So make sure you check that out.
And follow me on Twitter, at Kathy Griffin, Instagram, at Kathy Griffin, Facebook, Kathy Griffin, and I have a new text list, which is really cool.
What?
Yes, so I give out my number. It's my text number.
Yeah.
But I swear, I read every text and I respond to them. And the text.
So people can just text you.
Seriously. Like, I'm going to go home and I'm going to start going through texts for real. The
really?
Text number
Let's get
is
the number.
312.
Oh, hold on. I'm writing this down because I'm going to text you.
Oh, I
you,
love
girl.
It. Yes. And I will text you. Like, I'm not going to be annoying and over text you. But
no,
I'll text you like a little funny joke or a little video or something. All right. So
312.
It's 312 because I'm from Chicago. So uh-huh. I thought that'd be a good one. 312 584 312-584-3787. That number again, 312-584-3787. And that's just been fun too. Because a new way to build the business.
I love that. Yeah. Honey, the true working girl, professional, business diva over here. I'm so happy to sit down with you.
It's my pleasure.
And to have this moment. It's so awesome. And I'm so sorry. I mean, I'm sure a million people have told you of what you have to go through, but you are a story of resilience. And sometimes we have to go through stuff, and I know it's not good during the time.
Yeah.
You can't stand when you're going through a rough time. Someone's
right.
Like, well, baby, you know,
yeah.
We all have to go through mess. You're like, okay, thank you, but I didn't need to hear that
right now.
But kudos to you for coming back and coming back even stronger. And I hope that inspires people to keep going. You know, on Drag Race, honey, I ain't had no makeup on the first time I came through. But I came back.
Right.
And you are definitely a comeback as well. And I love that.
Oh,
so
thanks.
Keep going, sis.
And you're doing so great. And it's because you're a hard worker.
Well,
and that's it. You take talent and hard work. And that's it. Believe it or not, the basics still work.
And I saved my money.
Oh, show business. Thank you.
Show business. Thank you guys so much for listening
Thank
in.
You.
Make sure you can catch this podcast, Shangela, on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify as well as Stitcher. And make sure you tell somebody, subscribe, rate, review, write comments. We like that. And even post the blue dress picture. But just know they're coming after you if you do. Hallelujah. And I love you. Thank you, Kathy.
I love you. Thank you.
Hallelujah, guys.